Welcome to We Fly the Flag, the Air Canada Pilots Podcast. 133, welcome back. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I'm your host, Jason Chamberlain. This episode was inspired by you, the Air Canada pilots, and particularly those that were present during the Toronto LEC meeting at the end of March this year. Your MEC was very much in the spotlight at that meeting, with a multitude of questions about timelines, options, and leverage. And although the questions were answered at the meeting, the MEC wants to address those inquiries and concerns on a much bigger scale. So this episode is dedicated to getting the same answers to every pilot, not just those attending the LEC meetings. So here we are. We have a lot to talk about today. I'm joined by MEC Chair, First Officer Charlene Huddy, MEC Vice Chair, First Officer Jess Yancey, and MEC P2P Chair, First Officer Ryan Moak. And on site assisting with technical setup today is MEC SBSC Chair, Captain Sina Ali-Mir-Solari. So welcome, everyone. And Ryan, this is your first time on the podcast. So do you mind giving me a quick introduction and a little bit about yourself and how you came to be Chair of the P2P Committee?
Sure, Jason. I live in Calgary and commute to Toronto. I'm a 787 FO. Before coming to Air Canada, I spent 10 years at Jazz and was part of the P2P committee there for a time. Came over to Air Canada in 2016 on the first pilot mobility list, PML. At some point after that there, I was elected as an ACPA counselor in Vancouver. And the role of pilot to pilot and the counselor role that we had under ACPA were very similar, where your job was to fly the line, talk to pilots, bring their concerns up to the local council so that they could be addressed at the MEC level, which is very similar to what pilot to pilot does now. I'm fairly passionate about the idea of helping our pilots build engagement with each other and making sure that they have the right information that is truthful information on which to base their decisions as we move forward.
All right. Great. Thanks, Ryan. And Charlene and Jesse, well, we know both of you pretty well by now, so you get to forgo your introductions today. So this episode will explore a number of important talking points, including the protocol agreement we entered into versus just starting conciliation immediately. We'll talk about the rules surrounding disclosing what has been potentially agreed to already and why those rules exist. We'll talk about the ebb and flow of negotiations and why some items are left till last, such as when we see a TBD on the negotiations update table. I'll make sure we touch on the options surrounding Rouge. We'll also talk directly about Mr. Kaplan, and that's our mediator, and we'll discuss retro pay and hear our MEC's view on this. Finally, we'll discuss the likelihood of an impasse and what that looks like for the company and for the pilots. So, once again, welcome everyone. Let's jump right in. Charlene, I'm a Vancouver-based pilot. Naturally, I wasn't at the Toronto LEC meeting, but I'm getting the impression that our pilots were pretty fired up and brought the energy to the meeting. Is that about right?
As per usual, we had a very engaged pilot group at the Toronto LEC 253 meeting. That was a couple weeks ago here in Toronto along the airport strip. I think we just had shy of 100 pilots there. And the meeting was probably 3 to 4 hours, and it closed off with an update on negotiations and some questions and answers from myself and the negotiating committee. It was a really, really great engagement, and just a little more color was brought to light about where we are in this mediation protocol agreement and how the negotiations really are going as expected and how we wanted them to go all along since we kicked off bargaining back at the beginning of June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the big items on the table at question time was, why are we not just starting conciliation now? Let's just bring the hammer down. Let's get this done. Can you speak to that for me?
I certainly would speak to that. We chose not to go into a potential premature conciliation at the beginning of the year. We chose to enter into this mediation protocol agreement with Air Canada because we are trying to achieve the very best collective agreement we can for our pilots. It's a world-class contract. We laid out what we're trying to achieve in Flight Plan 2024, and our mission, our goal is to get absolutely the most we can for our pilot group. If we had entered conciliation prematurely, there would not have been enough time to negotiate the items that our pilot group expects and deserves, and getting everything we can out of Air Canada, that wouldn't have been an option if we are in conciliation right now. If we had gone into conciliation at the beginning of the year, we'd be quickly approaching potential strike or lockout action. And where we are in this mediation protocol agreement, as many of our pilots have seen through the negotiating notepads that come out every 2 weeks, like, we are making progress. Slowly but surely, we are getting progress and agreements on our outdated collective agreement that simply wouldn't have happened on an accelerated timeline in conciliation.
Yeah, and I mean, any pilot flying the line with Air Canada knows, like, it's the devil's in the details, and there's so much to work through and correct. Like you said, we just cannot rush that process. So, okay, well, that's great. Thanks, Charlene. Jesse, the MEC collectively decided to take a more transparent approach to the negotiations process. Historically, ACPA was a more closed-door kind of environment. It created trust issues with the pilots it was supposed to represent. Now, I love the open approach that ALPA has taken. I think it's keeping pilots engaged. But there is a limit to what can and cannot be disclosed, especially during the collective bargaining process.
Yeah, Jason, I mean, I'd love to be able to share everything that happens behind closed doors. But practically speaking, it's just not realistic. Reality is that even though we've TA'd an article, it still does remain subject to change. And the amount of movement that happens, particularly once we start talking about complex articles like scheduling, it just wouldn't be feasible to tell the pilot group everything that changes. There's another aspect here. I mean, every pilot has their article of interest. I mean, it could be pension, it could be benefits, GDIP. If we disclosed what we had been able to achieve in those articles, it really serves to deleverage us. We continually say the best deal is the deal reached at the table, but ultimately this pilot group and this MEC is ready to take this to the end stage here, and that potentially means work action. If a member has their article of interest in their pocket, I'd hazard a guess they'd be a little less willing to take it to the end zone with us. So,
yeah, that's really well explained. Okay, thanks for that. While you're on the mic, Jesse, so why are we checking off certain items, some that seem almost a little redundant, such as, well, not to take away from the importance of it, but I feel like it's already been established in articles such as seniority, but the major items, especially some that might appear more clear-cut, well, they seem like they're being left to the end. I guess there's a certain flow to the way and when things are talked about.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point here is to try and build some momentum into the process. Every article is important, but there are certainly articles that are easier to discuss, that are lower in monetary value, that won't have such an impact on the pilot headcount. So naturally, it's easier to get those things out of the way first. The idea here would be trying to take as many little articles off the table as we can so that they've already been agreed to should we enter conciliation. And at that point, the timeline really accelerates, and you just don't have time to bargain those smaller items. You really get drawn down into the high cost items, something like vacation, for example. There's a monetary cost there, but there's also a headcount cost. So those things just take time, and it's important to use the smaller items to build a little bit of inertia and momentum in the discussions, so that when you do get down to those big heavy lift items, you can hopefully rely on a little bit of that inertia to carry you through the discussions.
Yeah.
If I could tag on to that, Jason, and what Jesse had said quite well, is it doesn't matter if you're negotiating a pilot contract or you're negotiating like a nurses union contract or whatever labor group you're at the table with and your respective employer. There is an ebb and flow to negotiations, like you just said, and you start out with the smaller items, the items that are lower in monetary value, to start building up some of that momentum to get into those more contentious items, which I know in our entire pilot group appreciates that pay is one of the big items for us. But again, it's not just about the pay. We also have to see that quality of life and those improvements in our language, in our collective agreement. And so we wanted to lay the ground work and get into this process with the company, with Mediator Kaplan overseeing this, where we're actually now negotiating that black and white language with ourselves and the company. Mediator Kaplan's been able to facilitate that process, because up until us engaging him, we weren't able to negotiate that black and white language. And we know that's crucially important to our pilot group when it comes time for our pilots to have their say on that tentative agreement and that final language. So it does take time, though. There's just no way around that.
Yeah, and it's amazing what a big difference, you know, one word in one paragraph of a subsection of an article, such as should versus will, it can change, you know, time with your family just in one word. So, you know, whether you're home or not. Ryan, did you want to jump in there too?
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Just one other thought is there's a bit of a psychological piece to starting with the smaller items and moving towards the bigger items as well, where the negotiations committees, both the company and the union side, need to prove to one another that they can actually reach an agreement on things. So if you start with things that are easy to agree on and establish that baseline that, yes, we can finally reach a deal on certain things, as you get towards the more intricate or contentious issues towards the end, that baseline is already there. And you know that there is a path to finding an agreement. You just have to figure out what it is.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Ryan. That's really well explained to everyone. Okay. Next question. So the protocol agreement, Ryan, maybe you can help me understand more about this. I want to talk about what Mr. Kaplan is actually doing at the table, as in, like, what is his role when the negotiations table already has professional, experienced negotiators sitting across from each other? And I mean that with the utmost respect from someone who genuinely isn't sure what he does in a room that's already filled with an experienced group of negotiators.
We're using a process called shuttle negotiations, where our negotiations committee is in one room and the company's is in another. Mr. Kaplan will move between the rooms with the proposals and the counterproposals. The membership's been very clear, and it has been actually enshrined in our policy manual, that the membership will have final language prior to a ratification vote. So that's part of the slow pace. They're actually writing and passing proposed final language back and forth across the table. Now, the topic of discussion week to week is also something that needs to be agreed upon. We can propose certain articles to the mediator, just as the company can. Both sides would have a strategy in mind on which articles they want to discuss from any week to the next. Some of this will also come down to which subject matter experts might be available to join the discussion that week. For example, if members of SCEDCOM or PBS weren't able to attend one week, then it doesn't make much sense in discussing scheduling that week either.
Okay, yeah. And you touched on something there that caught me a bit off guard, to be honest. You said they're passing back and forth final language.
Yeah, that was what the negotiations committee has decided to, the way they've decided to approach this negotiations is rather than pass term sheets that can be open to interpretation later, create a delay in writing final language at a later date as well. Instead of doing that, eliminate that part of the process and just write out the actual proposed contract language as you would like to see it. You pass that to the company, and then they have time to digest it. They can suggest their changes and edits that they would like to see, and that can slow things down significantly. You could spend several hours bargaining back and forth or negotiating back and forth on a single sentence of an article.
Yeah, like something such as, I don't know, crew scheduling shall try to release
best efforts,
yeah. You know, sound principles, yeah. Versus will release a block holder once his scheduled flying is, or something along those lines.
It's a perfect example.
It's kind of what Charlene alluded to earlier, like these things are taking longer because we're getting the details already sorted now, not after everyone said yay or nay. And okay, very good. Before I go on, Charlene or Jesse, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, Jesse and I were able to spend a day with our negotiating committee a few weeks back watching the shuttle negotiations take place. And I think it's important that our pilot group realizes just how hard our negotiating committee is working behind the scenes. Even Mediator Kaplan has commented on how hardworking our committee is. And it really actually took me back to the days when I was on the negotiating committee at First Air. And exactly what you guys are talking about, you're sitting there and you're looking at one word or one sentence and you're batting it around the room, and that it takes time because everybody's looking at it and at different angles and different ways that it could be interpreted to try and arrive at the best possible language that we can negotiate in this process.
Yeah, okay. Great. Well, Charlene, while I have you on the mic there, so can we talk timeline for a bit? So being a line pilot, but I'm also working with the union, I've learned that it's a delicate balancing act. There's pressure from the pilot group to move on, move forward, move quicker, but obviously we want to get this right as well. Are you able to define a timeline or give a more sort of clear-cut picture as to, okay, you know what, this day, this month, is yes or no time, or is it not really that clear? Is it kind of more of a gray area?
I think that negotiations are very fluid by the nature of negotiations, that it took us the greater part of half a year of last year to get to this point to enter into the mediation protocol agreement. And I'm as frustrated as anybody for the length of time that it took to get to this place of negotiating back and forth proposals and counterproposals with Air Canada. So I will say that I understand that there might be frustration building about the timeline. I think you can see the progress that is being made in the negotiating notepads that are coming out. And as we get into the more contentious articles, or even the more detailed articles like scheduling and PBS, again, we're going back to it does take time. We're coming out from that 10-year deal and that really stale collective agreement language, some of which even goes back further than 10 years. So that's where I think some patience is necessary. And when we look at the mediation protocol agreement, we know that there's the four ways that the protocol agreement can come to an end. That's if a tentative agreement actually is reached in this process. If both ourselves and Air Canada mutually agree that it just isn't working and we decide to end the protocol agreement, Mediator Kaplan could deem an impasse. When you look at the negotiating notepad, you can see that there's still a lot of articles that are in discussion or still need to be discussed. So that timing of an impasse isn't imminent, shall we say. And then, of course, on June 1st, either party could serve 14 days notice ending the mediation protocol. And that would release us to what we have under the Canada Labor Code in terms of an actual impasse or going down that conciliation route. So right now, the mediation protocol agreement is working, and we intend on staying in the mediation protocol agreement and coming to agreements with Air Canada as much as we can. Ultimately, if we can get a tentative agreement, that would be ideal, but we haven't touched the really contentious items just yet.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of information that's come out in the last few minutes here where I'm like, okay, you can really see why this has taken a bit longer. And we had a really slow start too, we're feeling out the company, they're feeling out us, and we're realizing, the company is not working as quickly as maybe we feel like they should be here. But now things are picking up, so it's good to see. All right.
I think it's important to, one final thought in all of this. When I look at, we're approaching mid-April here, so we haven't even been members of ALPA full year yet. And so a big part of this process has been that whole merger from ACPA into ALPA. We are ALPA. We're using all the ALPA resources and staff. They're sitting at the table with us. That has been very different for Air Canada. They haven't had to negotiate with ALPA ever. So there's been a learning process there, to say the very least. So that's been part of getting to this stage where we are in negotiations right now.
Yeah. All right. That's great. Thanks, Charlene. Jesse, so this is a little bit out of left field, but to keep us moving along here, it's been brought up at a couple of LEC meetings, so I think it has a place on the podcast today. Can you touch on what you think is going to happen with Rouge? What's the MEC's position on this?
Yeah, Jason, that's one we hear quite a bit on the line. I mean, the company has disclosed what they want to do with Rouge. They know it's part of their fleet and their long-term business plan. At the end of the day, our priority as the MEC is to ensure that the working conditions at Rouge are reflective of the working conditions of every other airplane in the fleet. Ultimately, I don't care what the company paints on the side of an airplane. I care about the wages and working conditions of those operating that airplane. So, our priority, and it's been supported by the membership and survey data, is to ensure that whether it's a mainline airplane, a Rouge airplane, or a whatever airplane you want to call it next, that they're all flown under the same wages and working conditions as every other airplane in the fleet.
Okay, understood. Maybe you can talk to this. We were getting a 2% raise every year, but it would appear like the pilots did not get one in 2024. I thought everything had to stay the same once we go into the negotiations process. Why did that not stay the same?
If we were to look at the language within the current collective agreement, the one dated in 2020, in Article 12, the pay rates exist for the 2% raise in 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023 only. One thing we need to remember is, as part of the 10-year framework, it was split up into 3 3-year agreements and 1 1-year agreement. The provisions for 2% per year were contained in the overall 10-year framework, which would have been included in each individual contract, so the 3 3-year and the 1 1-year. However, last May, we decided that the direction from the pilot group was clear and they did not want us to continue under the framework, and Air Canada refused to provide us with an agreement that recognized our value to the point in which the MEC would have been comfortable agreeing under the framework. Since we left the framework last year, the current agreement, the one from 2020 to 2023, is in the statutory freeze. And within the language contained in that agreement, there is no 2024 pay raise. One thing of note is there is a provision for our per diems to go up. So if you were to look at Article 18, where the per diems are contained, there actually is a 2% pay raise for the per diems only. So those will stay. Unfortunately, the 2% pay cut in today's inflationary environment, we didn't get in April of 2024.
Well explained. Thanks, Sina. I'm sure John Fraser, the chair of the expenses committee, would be all over that as well, or getting questions about it. So very good. Okay, so we've already forgone the 2% pay raise this year at a time when inflation is skyrocketed. It makes an already stale expired contract a little more bitter as time draws on. Is the survey data giving the MEC a good read on where the Air Canada pilots sit regarding retro pay, or is that not something that we've really surveyed about?
This is a question that came up at the Toronto LEC meeting. It's something we receive numerous darts on as well, especially the further out we get from our contract expiry date of September 29th, 2023. Of course, our pilots are wondering, what about retro pay? Are we guaranteed to have retro pay? The thing about retro pay is it does have to be negotiated. We do realize this is a priority for our pilot group. And further to that, we know that Air Canada is thinking about it as well. When they announced the Q4 results about a month ago, they did state during that call for the investors that they had factored in some type of retro pay. I'm sure the percentage of which, though, will be up for debate near the end of our negotiations, though. But yes, retro pay is on the top of everybody's mind.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about end stage of collective bargaining. We sort of talked about how long it's been. We've talked about the process and why it feels like it's taking a while. Ryan, maybe you can touch on this for me. So let's say we reach an impasse. Does the work that's been put in already, does it get thrown out of the window? Like, what happens during an impasse? Can you tell us more about that?
Our goal throughout this process is to come to an agreement on as many contract items as possible before potentially reaching an impasse. Entering conciliation does not equate to starting from zero, as things agreed to in good faith prior to conciliation remain part of the back and forth overall negotiating process. Jesse mentioned earlier, once TA'd, the items are essentially put up on a shelf. Now, with that said, as we progress towards the end of negotiations, we may need to take one of those items down off the shelf to discuss it a little bit further. An example of this could be something like pay rates and pension calculations. The final rates of pay that we agreed upon are going to have a significant effect on the pension calculation. If we've previously TA'd pension before agreeing on pay, we may in fact have to take pension down off the shelf, adjust a few things in there, and then put it back. Now, when it comes to an impasse, there is a well-defined schedule in the Canada Labour Code that comes into play. First, the Ministry of Labour has up to 15 days to appoint a conciliator. That conciliator will be an employee of the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service, or the FMCS. So while that role is very similar to the one Mr. Kaplan is filling now, since he's an independent, it is unlikely that Mr. Kaplan would be named as our conciliator. The moment a conciliator is named, conciliation begins and lasts a minimum of 60 days. This can be extended, but only by mutual agreement of both parties. If at the end of the conciliation phase, we still have not reached an agreement, there is a 21-day cooling off period before any strike or lockout could occur. And additionally, there's a requirement for 72 hours notice before either side can either strike or lock the pilots out. This 81-day period is going to fly by, and it's going to be all hands on deck for all of your union officials. So much of the work that the Strategic Preparedness Strike Committee has been doing recently has centered around extensive planning for this possibility. One point that should be emphasized is that any job action that were to occur before an employee group is in a legal strike position would be deemed illegal and is definitely not something that either our MEC or ALPA in general supports.
So I think it has to be said that, like, right now we are not in a legal job action situation. And this MEC can't support anything that could be construed as potential job action. And we've had a couple MEC messages come out clarifying that. I think what's really important to remember is, as a pilot group, the way that this pilot group has engaged and the way that it has unified has been incredible. And that's given us an incredible amount of say and pressure towards Air Canada. And so we need to stay unified. We need to keep our eyes on the prize, which is our world-class contract, and certainly not to start firing shots at each other. Mm-hmm. If and when we are in a legal job action position, and let's be clear, it's up to Air Canada whether or not we get there. We know the contract that our pilot group deserves, and we're doing everything we can to secure that contract. If it comes to us being in a legal job action position, there will be no doubt about what this MEC expects from this pilot group, and I know this pilot group is going to rally around us and behind us, because that's the kind of unity and engagement that we have clearly seen. So we're not in that state right now. And if anything, people should be mindful that we might end up in that potential job action position, up to including a full strike. And so if one wanted to pad their bank accounts now, it's not such a bad time to do that.
Mm. Okay. Very good.
I mean, Jason, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but we expect Air Canada to treat us and compensate us as professionals. We need to treat our peers, the ones that we share the cockpit with, as professionals. And we just simply can't be throwing mud at other members who are availing themselves of an article that's in the collective agreement. It's just not something we can support. We want Air Canada to treat us as professionals. We need to treat each other as professionals.
Yeah. All right. That's well explained. Thanks, both of you. That's great. Well, we're getting towards the end of the episode. Sina, maybe I'll get you to step in here. Can you just address what events we have coming up in the near future?
Sure. We've been busy planning multiple events across multiple bases and where our pilots are. Currently, we have just had the Toronto LEC meeting, which sparked this podcast. In addition, we will have LEC meetings for 254 in Montreal, 251 in Vancouver, and 252 in Winnipeg. All of those events will also be followed by a Pilot Unity building event. The meetings and the Pilot Unity building events are open to all members across all bases. However, if you attend a LEC meeting that you are not a part of, you just don't have a right to vote in the business of that meeting. Furthermore, we have many other family awareness events coming up. There is currently something planned in Montreal. There is something planned for Toronto and Vancouver as well. Keep an eye on your fast reads for more information and RSVP links for these events.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Sina. Ryan, representing the P2P committee, anything you want to close out on?
Yeah, I think pilot-to-pilot P2P is a really valuable tool. We've got about 100 volunteers right across the system. You'll be able to pick them out. They either have a red lanyard that says a little different from the standard lanyard that says pilot-to-pilot. They may have a bag tag that also says pilot-to-pilot. Our job is to collect the sentiments from the pilot group, feed that up the chain to the MEC, and also to collect rumors, questions, things like that that come up. Those get sent to either the MEC or the Negotes Committee and then brought back down to the pilot group in a fairly quick fashion. So if you hear things that you are questioning whether they're true or not, you hear rumors, you have questions about the Negotes process at all, find a P2P rep or send us a dart, and we'll get back to you just as quickly as we possibly can.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Ryan. Jesse, I'd be remiss without asking if you want to close out on your side of things.
Yeah, I actually got to go flying 2 weeks ago. It was It was a nice break, we'll call it. But it was quite humbling walking through the terminal and seeing how many world-class contract lanyards there were. I don't recall seeing anybody without one. The amount of support that this pilot group continues to exhibit is quite phenomenal. You'll start seeing some new world-class contract pins as well. We started handing those out at the Toronto Local Council meeting. And as we wrapped up our MEC meeting last week, I made sure that every one of the other bases, their reps had stock for their council meetings coming up. So be sure to attend those. If you don't or are unable to go, make sure you reach out to one of our P2P reps, and we'll be sure to get one to your mailbox.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Jesse. And finally, Charlene, any last comments for the episode?
I want to reemphasize that this MEC is laser focused on grabbing absolutely everything we can for our pilot group to get to that world-class contract, to the contract that our pilot group deserves. That's why we're in the mediation protocol agreement. And this is really dependent on Air Canada to show up with the yes to the bargaining table and invest in our highly skilled pilot group. That's something that this MEC, myself, Jesse, we constantly remind management of. An investment in our pilot group is going to be an investment in this airline so that Air Canada can be that world-class airline with world-class pilots.
Mm. All right. Thanks, Charlene. Okay, well, this has been an on-the-fly update from your MEC. We really appreciate you, our listeners, taking time out of your day to tune in. The We Fly the Flag podcast has surpassed 20,000 downloads now, and I can't thank our listeners enough for their continued engagement and support as well. Well, more episodes are on the way. Keep an eye on your ALPA email for MEC updates and new surveys. Show your support and unity by wearing your ALPA lanyard. And as always, fly safe.